Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, 23rd of October, 2020. And we have a pretty boring market session, I would say, to talk about yesterday. There's some few interesting stories, though, to pull out of what's going on. And, of course, overnight there was a lot of focus on this second and final U.S. presidential debate between Biden and Trump. Seems to be, I didn't get a chance this morning to run through the debate itself or the full debate, but the sort of consensus in the commentariat is that Trump sort of scored a small victory. And the one most negative thing potentially to tilt voters one way or the other was supposedly Biden's mention of, transitioning away from oil, that he would like to see that. And Trump yelled out, well, did you hear that, Texas? Did you hear that, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania? Maybe this could, at the margin, of course, affect some voting patterns out there. But there wasn't any drama in the market action overnight for sure. And as well, it's worth noting that 49 million Americans almost, as of yesterday before the debate, have already voted in this election. So just as a reminder, slide one, the NASDAQ 100, very similar technical setup in the S&P 500 as well. This sort of pivotal area that was the prior high that we sort of broke back above. It's also the location of some key moving averages. The 21-day you can see there in green, and the 55-day a little bit below. So let's call it the 11,600 to 11,500 area in the NASDAQ 100 as a very pivotal thing or pivotal area for the downside. Couple of stories. Well, yesterday, Peter, we mentioned Tesla and those crazy good results. And of course, Tesla's been a massive winner this year. But I just, it's so classic when you see that type of news met with small gap open, sort of sells off all day long. So take us through that, and then take us through the Intel news, which I think was by far the biggest single equity story late yesterday.
Yeah, it was a peculiar price action in Tesla, as you mentioned, John, because I actually think it was quite a strong result. You had cash flows almost doubling from a year ago. I mean, $4 billion is pretty sizable. There is a zero credit risk any longer, at least not in the medium term for Tesla. So a lot of uncertainties have been priced out, and they were quite positive on their China outlook, and construction of the Gigafactory in Berlin was going well. They're soon starting production on the Model Y, if it not already has started in China. So I think you're right. It tells you a little bit that we've come so far now in technology stocks that even if you get very, very strong results, I mean, you need to deliver something like Snap, where you really knock it out of the ballpark. Otherwise, you won't get any increases. So I think the combination of that, and then there's a further delay of the fiscal talks. We're heading into the weekend, but then also we have the rising U.S. yields, which you will be talking about, Althea. I think could begin here at the margin actually grinding into equity prices, because higher bond yields is a high discount rate on future cash flows.
Actually, I want to, before we get to the Intel a bit, yeah, let's take those rising yields. I'll say it to me, it may be the rising yields in the U.S., especially at the long end of the curve, are threatening these levels at the highest. Basically, there's one brief spike in early June that was just slightly higher than where we are now in the 10-year and the 30-year. Is to me, or at least what I'm reading is this is into it, is that this is some sort of bet on massive fiscal from the U.S., likely Biden win, and especially if it's a Democratic sweep, you get to freeze up the whole congressional ability to do massive fiscal stimulus. Is that your read of the situation as well? Is this a presidential play, or what are the dynamics do you think are driving the U.S. yields higher?
I think that at this point in time, John, investors are very much thinking that whatever is going to be the result of this U.S. election, there is going to be anyway a great amount of spending that is going to push the long part of the yield curve higher and faster. The real question here that we have is what is the Fed going to do about it? Because if, according to Fed calculations, the inflation is not rising, then it wouldn't want the yield curve to steepen. So we might see some Fed speakers. Today we have the New York Fed Logan speaking about market liquidity. It would be very interesting to understand how they're going to continue with their bond purchases and if they're going to shift some of them on the long term of the yield curve. But I still think that even if they shift their purchases on the long part of the yield curve would continue to steepen, but it will be a slower steepening.
Slower. So they would just slow the progress there. And then you've, just to complete out your look at the very long end of the curve, looking at Italy as well, we've talked about this, I think it was last week, So we're seeing quite a movement in the spread here between Italy and Germany. You're wondering if there's some value there, I presume, because you think that the ECB is going to continue to very much support spread tightening sort of in a broad sense.
Yes, absolutely. Like what we have seen is that the spread between the 30-year BTPs and the Bund is widening to levels that we have seen during the coronavirus.
On slide 6.
Yeah, in slide 6. So you can see that the spread levels is around February, March this year, and they are widening. I think that this is a buy opportunity for the simple fact that everybody knew that there would have been a rise in cases of coronavirus in Europe and in Italy as well. So now people are basically selling off BTPs because they are thinking like, well, more coronavirus cases bring more lockdown, weaker economic outlook. But in reality, on the background, Italian BTPs are well supported. Yesterday, there was a 30-year syndicated bond sales that was very successful. Actually, the spread that Italy paid for this syndicated bond sale was the narrowest since 2018. So definitely, if we look at the at slide 7, where we see like the spread between BTPs and the Bund, and also in comparison with Spanish spreads and Portuguese spreads, we see that the 30-year BTPs trade much richer than its counterparties. So definitely, the weakness that we see now might be a buy opportunity.
Okay. Interesting stuff. Also, the message they send in next week's ECB meeting, and whether there is talk they're going to have to increase this scale of purchases, perhaps by half a trillion euros, whether that comes already at this meeting or not until the December meeting. Let's switch gears back to the Intel story overnight. Here's one tech company that missed and missed badly. Peter, what's going on here?
Yeah, what is going on? That's actually, I was quite surprised about this because the shares were down 9% in aftermarket trading, and it's all due to not a very rosy outlook. They expect actually, revenue to continue to decline in Q4. Revenue on a group level was down 4.5% on a year-to-year basis, and it was in particular the data center segment that took a hit. You can see that on the small insert here. Almost down 10% from a year ago, and you wonder what happened, because the data center segment was the growth engine and what was basically the only or one of the key segments that was driving valuation gains in Intel, because we know this is a high growth area. It supports the services, digital services economy, music, video streaming, everything also related to app stores and photos, etc. Right. So this is a worry. They say themselves it's COVID-19 and it's a lower demand from enterprise and government. I'm not fully buying it, but let's see, because one of their fierce competitors, at least in the data center arena, is Nvidia. So if Nvidia doesn't come out with the same comments, I think then it's serious business for
also Intel. Anecdotally, I mean, this is purely anecdotally, but I follow the space a little bit, just long term. I've followed chips on the consumer level, and you go into a store nowadays and you see laptops with reasonably similar ratings, and you see that the AMD chip laptops are selling significantly cheaper than the Intel chip laptops for what appears to be similar performance. And there is some, I think I saw something as well in the report, that they're also seeing compression of margins in general. So, and that in that consumer space, it's always been an area where they've been so dominant. And that was not the case. The AMD wasn't even in the laptops really just a few years ago.
And actually, an interesting angle here on this one. Searching around on Google Cloud's homepage, I was just wondering what you could actually buy in terms of offerings. And if you want to buy 30 machines to do vast machine learning calculations, what I found curious was, or interesting, was that typically in the old days you didn't have the option between Intel and AMD, and the options available now to pick specifically AMD chips and machines were quite wide. And that was actually something I thought about. So maybe also it's AMD actually, you know, taking market share from Intel. But let's see. We'll probably be wiser in a couple of quarters.
And I neglected to mention when we talked about just the broad situation across markets. I think we're all waiting for this U.S. stimulus news. There's just no update there. What was the quote? Just about there, said Pelosi. Well, we've been just about there for weeks, and there's still the supposed standoff between the Democrats who want the state and local aid, and Trump shouts that, I'm willing to go bigger, but he doesn't want to support states where it's democratically run, poorly run, high crime, all the things he says. No ability to see what's going to happen here, but it does appear to me the high risk is that this slips, the election, or the votes on it, key votes on it, slip beyond the election. If there's a contested or ugly election scenario, or Trump, for example, loses and is just unwilling to cooperate on any level, could aggravate the risk of a standoff extending even longer. And we just see from the market activity in Forex, slide 3, Eurodollar. So we slipped back below 118 this morning after closing above what looked like a key level on the upside. It's all sloppy. It's still a rising channel. So I guess we'd have to threaten the bottom of that rising channel, maybe towards 117.50 for this to be news. But I'm not convinced we get any major direction. And then in my yesterday's FX update, I talked about ways to hedge for a chaotic U.S. election scenario, one in which I imagine we would see profound risk off. For example, maybe if the market's a bit more hedging its bet on the bets than what appears in the headlines on a Democratic clean sweep, if we get an absolutely stomping Democrat victory that seems to give them the mandate to be more aggressive on the taxation front as well as the spending front, that could very much change the dynamic around risk sentiment. Disruptions, or we could just see a contested election scenario that creates risk sentiment negativity for another reason, whatever. Something like Aussie yen and Aussie yen puts, they look cheap to me. The implied volatility is not expensive for putting on something like a 2-month put from here, even if you want to extend it out. And you see on the chart on slide 2, the 74 level in Aussie yen, a very key one if we close below there. This is a classic barometer within the G10 FX for risk sentiment. So just one to keep in mind there. Might be cheaper in some ways for trading volatility than trading the actual equity futures, which it tends to correlate to. And then we had some interesting data out overnight. We had the New Zealand Q3 CPI data out way below expectations. I was surprised we didn't get a larger reaction because to me it encourages the view that the New Zealand is more ready than ever, the RBNZ, the central bank there, to shift to a negative rates policy, missing at 0.7% quarter-on-quarter and 1.4% year-on-year. I don't think the RBNZ is happy with that. And then we were talking about earlier, Peter, this jobless claims dropping all the way below 800,000. If you read a little bit into the details, California coming back online after trying to sort through its data and look at some fraudulent claims, I think it just points to this. It's very difficult to get a sense of the quality of these reads week to week. But still, it is good news, of course, that it's below 800,000, and we have the continuing claims dropping another million to below 8.5 million now. But we have to see that the participation rate starts to pick up in the monthly figures to believe that that is good news. And there was the news that the extended benefits for people that have been out of work for a long time actually rose. And you actually made a brief comment, I don't know if you want to add to it, but something about that when you have a services recession, it's a little bit more difficult to recover from than these manufacturing slowdowns.
Yeah, it actually goes right to the calendar, actually, because we have flash PMIs coming out for the US zone here this morning for October. So preliminary estimates for both the services and the manufacturing sector. And the ECB had a research paper out a couple of days ago where they looked into the nature of a potential double dip recession, which, you know, the probability is definitely going up for that scenario. It's still not, I guess, the base case, but it's still going up with the rising COVID-19 cases. And the ECB's finding, or their best guess or estimate, is that if you have a services-led recession, which is typically not the case, it's typically always driven by the cyclical components of manufacturing, then it could be holding on to the economy much longer. It's much more difficult to get out of a services recession because it's, you know, it is a services economy, so it's much more profound, it's wider, etc.
Yeah, so those numbers are coming up this morning, probably before you even get a chance to listen to this podcast as well. It just feels like, also here in Denmark, that the walls are closing in again on these lockdowns and COVID-19. We had our worst, was it the worst reading ever, or one of the worst readings?
It was the worst reading yesterday.
So it's just, you know, the prospects, even with the vaccine good news coming in the coming weeks to a couple of months, and the rollout of that's going to take beyond this winter. So we're talking about a very ugly winter of slow activity until we either say let's get back to business because we have to just take the toll of the health on the health side, or we're just dragging on for another at least 3 months, if not more.
As long as I have a warm cup of coffee, a Bloomberg terminal, and the podcast with you guys, I'll get through the winter.
Yeah,
it's gonna be very lonely.
A very positive thought there from Peter, as usual. Let's look at the calendar. Slide 8. We have just also to point out, if you trade the EM, watch the Russian central bank decision today. No change expected there. And we have also flash PMIs out of the U.S., though for some reason these get a little bit short shrift in terms of attention, people preferring to look at the ISMs. Next week, pretty busy calendar with a few central banks out there. The Canadian Central Bank Wednesday, ECB Thursday. Again, it's up in the air whether they go now or go in December, and whether they have much to surprise the market with at this point in time. And do note, and we'll be looking for signals for the longer term in particular, that the Chinese Communist Party has its 14th plenum starting on Monday and ending up on Wednesday. And there has to be plenty of discussion there about long-term goals and strategic decisions linked to this ongoing risk of a profound U.S.-Chinese disengagement. So not that we'll get headlines straight from this meeting, but we'll try to look at it around the margins to see what's going on. And finally, I would just bring out the U.S. PCE inflation data. This is what prompts the Fed to react. If it misses badly or if it starts to exceed expectations, then that really sort of adds to the narrative around negative U.S. rates and adds to the fundamental support for the weak dollar outlook that many are believing is what we're transitioning into as we go into this election and its outcome later this year being 12 days. So we'll see what happens there. For now, have a great weekend. Stay careful out there, and we'll be back next week with the Saxo Market Call. For today, thanks for joining.